Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for you! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
That's right, we're back. And I mean that wholeheartedly because the Chicago Bulls realized very quickly why the Boston Celtics are still considered a dangerous team in the Eastern Conference with the 110-101 victory at the TD Garden. I'm your host, Cal Lee. Thank you for joining us here on the CLNS post-game show. The Boston Celtics bouncing back, getting their groove back. And usually when you do this at home against a formidable basketball team, a team that's a top three team in the Eastern Conference with the Chicago Bulls, that has to bolster your confidence as the Boston Celtics drop 110 on a new-look Chicago Bulls team. Clearly, this is no longer the Chicago Bulls of old that is predicated on stifling defense. They've got a lot of hustle players, a couple of young, budding superstars, still some great superstar quality type players in a Derrick Rose, a Paul Gasol, who are playing at, you know, at a very high level, but clearly are still trying to get their arms around the concept of playing as a Chicago Bull, playing with that kind of demeanor, that attitude. And a new head coach in Fred Hoiberg, who clearly is trying to figure out how to get this team to play at a high level on a night-in, night-out basis. And then you have the Boston Celtics. You know, and this is a basketball team that we've been saying from, you know, the beginning of this year, where people still thought that this Celtics team was an admiration for what they did last year to get themselves in the playoffs. We have seen in many instances through the course of this regular season so far, we haven't even gotten to the All-Star break, but we have seen that this team, when their mindset is in the right place and when they execute collectively as a team, they have as good a shot as any of the other seven teams aside from the Cleveland Cavaliers to put themselves in a position to be considered a threat of force, possibly to play in an Eastern Conference championship. The makeup of this Celtics team is one where you have to admire the play, and you have to admire the strength and the will and the determination. But now you're starting to see the talent as it begins to blossom. You're beginning to see the talent emerge through the system that Brad Stevens has enveloped with these guys, you know, as he goes through the second year of a playoff caliber type basketball team. So those of you who had an opportunity to see the Celtics team tonight defeat the Chicago Bulls team, and again, this is a regular season game, but remember what we're talking about here with this Boston Celtics team. You're talking a collective unit of guys that don't have playoff savvy yet. These are guys that have not won at the highest level, meaning getting themselves into the playoffs with a winning record, being a top four team in the Eastern Conference, playing, getting home field advantage. The games like these are games that will build you up, that will build up your confidence, because eventually you're going to run into the Chicago Bulls down the road. You are going to probably have to face them at some point if you make it in the playoffs. And you have to draw back on these games and utilize these as teaching mechanisms and also as a means of motivation, instilling the confidence that's necessary for these teams like the Boston Celtics to go out and give themselves an opportunity, a chance to advance further, to do better things. The Celtics 23-21 now, 12-10 at home. Impressive victory tonight by the Boston Celtics. And when we break this game down through, you know, in certain buckets, and we break it down for what it represents, there is the kind of games where this is a Boston Celtics team that tends to find itself, they find their groove, and they stay in that groove, and pretty much for the most part, they coast through, and they do great play. But this is a game about imposing your will. This is a game about not allowing the Chicago Bulls, who under the head coach of Fred Hoiberg is a now much more offensive-oriented basketball team, not allowing them to impose their will on the Boston Celtics. This was a game from the very outset that Brad Stevens wanted to leave his imprint on the Bulls' defense, that we are going to take it to the Bulls' defense. We are going to initiate. We are going to move the basketball, get open looks. And what does that equate to? A 34-point first quarter, which to me was kind of the recipe for the execution that the Boston Celtics were going to have tonight against a Chicago Bulls team, which, again, they may not be on the level of a Cleveland Cavaliers, but arguably are still, to me, the second, if not third, best team in the Eastern Conference. And when you have a player like Jimmy Butler, you got a player like Derrick Rose, you got Paul Gasol, Taj Gibson, and a litany of other players that can contribute, I mean, I would be foolish not to think that the Chicago Bulls team on paper is better than the Boston Celtics. But when the Boston Celtics play this kind of basketball, they arguably are better than at least six or seven of the other teams that could possibly be finding themselves in the Eastern Conference. We want to hear from you, 347-215-7771. This is Cal Lee. I host the Baseline NBA podcast along my co-host, Warren Shaw. We do a weekly show where we discuss all of the hot-button topics of the NBA. So we always encourage everyone to check us out at NBA underscore baseline. Hashtag up the baseline. Let us know who you are and, you know, what you're about. We always get into the good stuff. We do great interviews with writers, athletes, and people who are in the association, and they keep their fingers on the pulse of things happening in the association, so we encourage you to check this out. And not too long from now, we will be opening it up on the FanDuel's toll-free hotline, 347-215-7771. We want to hear from you, the listeners, about tonight's game. The Boston Celtics, again, with an impressive victory, a 110-101 victory in the Garden. Hopefully, we will be able to hear from our man, Jared Weiss, who will give us the grandstand Celtics locker room report so we can get a feel for what's been happening after the game and what all the chatter is with regards to tonight's victory. A couple of things I want to touch on, you know, as we continue on, and hopefully my guest, Richard Conte, will be on to help us do some more analyzation regarding this game. But one of the things that I think that's important to recognize with reference to what this Chicago Bulls team brings to the table tonight against, you know, our Boston Celtics is we are seeing a transition in talent. And the transition in talent is not necessarily depicted by what the records would reflect. I'm sure everybody is well aware of what has already happened and what has already taken place. The Cleveland Cavaliers have gone ahead and have fired head coach David Blatt. Now, why does this have any relation to tonight's game regarding the Boston Celtics and the Chicago Bulls? Let me go ahead and correlate that. A few years ago, we all were questioning whether or not Brad Stevens was equipped to help us do this rebuild process with the Boston Celtics, right? Tom Thibodeau at that time was the head coach of the Chicago Bulls. Tom Thibodeau found himself taking the Chicago Bulls to an Eastern Conference championship. He had an MVP player in Derrick Rose. He basically was able to take the Bulls to three or four straight playoff appearances, whether they were knocked out of the first round or got to the second round, the divisional playoffs, or made it to the semis, whatever the case may be. And in a blink of an eye, Tom Thibodeau still found himself with his walking papers. And ultimately, the Bulls management went in a different direction by hiring Fred Hoiberg. You look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, 30 wins already this year, okay? On pace to have a better season possibly than what they did last season. And they've given David Blatt his walking papers. Why? Because the players were not in tune with the coach. The coach was not in tune with the players. The respect wasn't there. Just the other night, we were having this conversation on Rabble TV with my co-host Warren Shaw on whether or not that respect level is going to be the detriment to David Blatt. And it's not that we were trying to predict anything. We were just saying, how important is it to have a coach that commands the respect of its players to go out and execute the game plan that is needed to win basketball games? And this, to me, is why I'm bringing this all full circle. Tonight you saw a collective effort of players. No one believing that they're bigger than the next. No one thinking that they are in superstar status. The limelight is shining on them. They got to be up in the morning for a photo shoot to True Religion jeans commercials or whatever the case have you. Tonight it was about beating one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference because that is what the Celtics needed to do. And that was channeled by Brad Stevens. Now, I've been a proponent for Brad Stevens for quite some time. I've watched him coach when he was at Butler, and while he was basically handed fool's gold, he sold us into taking rotten grapes and making it taste like fine wine for the last 2 years. And tonight is an indicative reason why you should have confidence in this Boston Celtics team, that despite the record of 23 and 21. He is getting these players prepared to play at a level that is necessary for them to compete, not just for this season, but moving forward. Because even with a 30-win record in the regular season, you could easily find yourself walking out the front door because you can't handle talking to one of the great players in the game in LeBron James. Or if you are a Lionel Hollins, you know, because the players are not in tune with you, you may not find yourself sitting at that seat, calling timeouts, drawing up plays. I'm telling you, the temperature for the coaching carousel in the NBA, while it's not as crazy in a year-in, year-out basis like it is in the NFL, it can be very, very, very comparative. And tonight was a game that the Celtics had to win. It wasn't a must win because they were going to get dropped out of the playoff picture or, you know, someone is on the hot seat. This was a must win game for the psyche of the Boston Celtics in recognizing where they stand. Every single game that you play against an above 500 team, every win that you collect, to me, is a marker in showing your growth. Because unless you are the Golden State Warriors, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the San Antonio Spurs, or the Cleveland Cavaliers, you ultimately do not have the cachet to be able to truly define yourself through the course of an NBA season or even in the playoffs in the same manner that they would be going about their business to win games and ultimately vie for an opportunity to play for a championship. When you break it down for what it represents, the Celtics tonight came out and they established themselves from the early outset. And when the Celtics do that, when this Celtics team executes their brand of basketball and imposes their will against the competition, this then becomes a matter of can they sustain that level of play? And when you force the Chicago Bulls to 20 turnovers, and you get 26 points off of those turnovers, it's reflective of you buying into the style of basketball that you play, and it is a representation of how you will not back down against whoever it is that you're playing against. And we've seen this throughout the year with the Boston Celtics. This wasn't the Celtics of last year where they can get blown out by 20, 30 points very quickly. This is the type of Celtics team that feels so confident in the way that they play that they are not afraid to jump on top of the best teams, establish a lead. Now, things get shaky in the second half of games. We've seen this with this team. They've established as much as a 15-16-point lead through the course of this game against the Chicago Bulls, and then ultimately, the Bulls being the Bulls, they will make their comeback. They will chip and chip and chip away. And if you are Brad Stevens, the next level or the next step in the process in getting this Celtics team to play these kind of games with W's in their column is they got to finish. They have got to execute and they have got to finish. And whether it's a matter of rotation or just the sheer ability of these guys understanding the desperation and the magnitude of the moment, while the Bulls obviously were going to make this a close game with the late run in the fourth quarter, I praise Brad Stevens for keeping these guys poised to show up after every timeout and getting a quality or a key basket to continue to help push the lead and sustain to keep the Bulls from completing the run that was necessary for them to pull out the victory. Want to hear from you, 347-215-7771. Again, this is the FanDuel toll-free call lines, and this is CLNS post-game show. Kyle Lee here, and we're talking the Celtics defeating the Chicago Bulls 110-101. Impressive victory all around. Great contributions from Isaiah Thomas, from Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk once again, showing solid work. Solid work tonight by Jared Sullinger. And on a night where Jay Crowder was not effective. And listen, Jay Crowder has been the team MVP, you know, for the course of this season. And there are going to be nights where your MVP player just isn't hitting his shots. He just isn't feeling it. Now, he doesn't score you 30 points per game, but his 17 points per, to me, are well needed for a well-balanced basketball team like the Boston Celtics. Tonight, 3 of 10 shooting, 1 of 2 from 3, but 7 points, 2 rebounds, and 3 steals. Clearly, the objective from Fred Hoiberg was to figure out a way to contain Jay Crowder from being the hustle player that he normally is. And so while he doesn't amaze you on the stat sheet, I still applaud the effort of Jay Crowder for doing the little things to help open up the door for guys like Sullinger, Olynyk, Bradley, and Thomas to eventually get their game going. And while the offense was being filtered through these playmakers, another solid effort by the bench for the Chicago for the Boston Celtics. Contributions from Evan Turner, Marcus Smart, Tyler Zeller, Jonas Jerebko, just really quality play across the board for this Boston Celtics team to eke out a victory. Listen, if you haven't noticed, this Eastern Conference is not the Eastern Conference of last year. Last year it was called the Eastern Conference, and it was called that for a reason. But this is what I've come to expect now with most of these teams that are playing out of the East, primarily out of the Atlantic Division. No, you don't use the New York Knicks as a stepping stone. No, you don't use the Boston Celtics as a stepping stone. You can't even use the Philadelphia 76ers as a gimme game any longer. These teams are vastly improving, and thus they are helping to build up the competitive level on a nightly basis. And clearly the Chicago Bulls knew that coming in, that going on the road, playing in the TD against a tough-minded Boston Celtics team, they could not afford to fall so quickly behind the way that they did. And listen, while you still have quality players like Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, who obviously is coming into his own, and he was a monster tonight for the Chicago Bulls, even with that being said, the one caveat about this Chicago Bulls team that I have still noticed, and it just never changes, no matter how many coaches you put in to fix the problem, this Chicago Bulls team is not built when they are down an exorbitant amount of points. This team does not play at a quick enough pace that when they are down by double digits extensively numerous periods throughout the course of a basketball game, that they don't know how to make those blitzing runs that can quickly change the tide in a basketball game. And if you're the Boston Celtics and you continually keep forcing, you know, turnovers, especially sloppy turnovers like we saw tonight from the Chicago Bulls, that bodes well for this Boston Celtics team. Again, imposing your will, not just offensively, but defensively. Because for the Chicago Bulls team to be able to win games, quality games, they have to minimize their turnovers and maximize their shot opportunities. And clearly, they got a great performance from Jimmy Butler, who was 10 for 20 from the field. But you can quickly tell that between him, Derrick Rose, and Paul Gasol, their primary ball makers and playmakers and play creators, they each had more than four turnovers apiece. So collectively between the three of them, they had 13 turnovers. And there's only so much that you can do if you're Fred Hoiberg, because clearly the rest of the team can't perform off of what those guys do the same way. But it doesn't help your cause to win a basketball game when both Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose, and Paul Gasol are averaging more than four turnovers apiece in a game in which they were clearly, marketably, the best players on the court, but didn't play like the best players on the court. We're going to go ahead and open up the lines, 347-215-7771. Caller, thanks for calling in to the CLNS postgame show. What did you think of tonight's game?
Excellent gritty win. Love to see this. I was a little bit scared coming out of the second half, you know, what team we were going to see from the Celtics. Because, you know, sometimes we've been known, especially lately, to kind of get out of the gates quickly, the beginning of games, and then kind of, you know, slowly but surely kind of gradually let that lead slip away. So I was glad to see that as the game got, I think it got within a point or two, very close, like a possession in that fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that the Celtics, you know, were able to, you know, stick it out, play that gritty basketball, and pull out the win, because I think that maybe a week ago we wouldn't have got this win. You know what I mean? This is one of those things where I think the team obviously is still growing. I think, you know, we're not even halfway through this season, and I think that, you know, Stevens is not only having to deal with rotations, which I think he has pretty much figured out at this point. I mean, we've seen who's going to be, you know, who's going to get the significant minutes and who's not, but he's also having to adjust to the improvement in play of some of those pieces that he has. I mean, I don't even know if Brad Stevens, not saying that Crowder had a good game tonight, but I don't think even Brad Stevens expected Jay Crowder's game to elevate this much over the span of basically one season in Boston. Isaiah Thomas, Brad Stevens was reluctant to put him into the starting lineup, even though Isaiah Thomas was getting vocal in the media last season about, you know, deserving to be in the starting lineup. Brad Stevens made that adjustment, and Isaiah Thomas is now our guy. So I think that, you know, with all the adjustments that he's had to make, this team, I mean, and it seems to fluctuate, you know, game by game. You know, we win, everybody's happy, we don't need anything else, we just need to sit back and watch these young players grow together and everything is cool. Then we lose to the Toronto Raptors or something like that, and oh, no, we got to trade somebody, we got to do this. I still think the Celtics need some pieces. I still think it would help to have somebody in certain games, you know, when we need to bang down low, to have somebody that can get it done. But
let me ask you a question real quick on this.
Sure.
Because you know, and I know that Nick, you always come on and you give great insight. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you this question with reference to the thought process in whether or not the Celtics should try to make a move. Usually when a move is being made, it's obviously with the intent to make this team better because they believe in the idea that this team is capable of making a sustained run for, you know, either the Eastern Conference Finals or possibly, you know, to play for the O'Brien Trophy. My question to you, though, is when you look at this basketball team, if you are Danny Ainge, are you trading to get a short-term, game-changer type player, or are you trading to put – you know, to basically offload some players that clearly can probably be useful elsewhere, get back some quality players that can still help your team, but they're not necessarily the most important pieces because it's all about what Thomas, what Smart, what Bradley, what Olynyk, what Crowder, what these guys are going to be doing through the course of this year that's gotten you to this point.
Well, I think if we know anything about Ainge, he's thinking about the moves that nobody else is thinking about. And if, you know, to make this team better in the long run, he has to sacrifice some pieces, you know, in the short run, because there's just too many assets, at least too many playable assets, like David Lee, like Tyler Zeller, who actually got some minutes tonight, I'm surprised, James Young, you know, there's too many pieces, and I think that as you leave those players in there, like David Lee, who seem to have accepted, you know, what's going on here, but I think he hopes to be moved because I think he still has basketball left in him, that I think if you leave some of these players in the locker room sitting there at the end of the bench, you might get a little bit of discontent. Now, I think Danny Ainge is clearly looking to make some moves. Are the moves he's going to make big blockbuster moves? Well, that really all depends on who's available. I mean, we don't exactly know which players are out there. Of course, we can, you know, go to, you know, Celtics blog, or we can go on, you know, Bleacher Report, and we can see, you know, oh, it's DeMarcus Cousins this week. It's, you know, it's Kevin Love, you know, because David Blatt just got fired. Now it's Kevin Love must be coming to Boston. Or, you know, Greg Monroe, who we could have had in free agency last year. I don't know why suddenly there's this massive interest in a max contract, Greg Monroe, now when we could have signed him as a free agent, or we could have at least made a run, which we didn't. So, I mean, there's no way to tell. I think if a deal comes across Danny Ainge's desk that makes the team, you know, that gives that team that extra step right now, Danny makes it. But I think that he's definitely a traitor at the deadline. I think he definitely wants to consolidate some of these things, whether that makes the team better right now or it's just a consolidation for future moves. There's just so many picks you can have. I mean, it's, at one point, people are going to look at it and be like, well, look at all those picks you got. Don't give me that one. Give me this one. Or give me two of them. Give me more of them. I mean, the worst thing that I think could happen is that Danny Ainge actually has to draft all of those picks. I mean, that would be a disaster. So I think at some point he's going to have to start unloading, you know, consolidating these assets. Even if it doesn't mean a blockbuster trade right now, some of these assets have to be consolidated for the sake of, you know, locker room chemistry, for the sake of, you know, maybe contract flexibility. Who knows? I know David Lee's contract expires at the end of the season anyway, but I think something is going to happen, and hopefully he can squeeze something out of it more than just another late draft pick. But I believe Danny will make a move. Do I think it's going to be a blockbuster? I don't know, because Danny is just one of those guys that you don't, you know, you sit there all off season, like this past off season. We sat there all off season waiting for, you know, a big splash to come, and then we get Amir Johnson, who's great. I like Amir Johnson, but you know what I mean? It wasn't the splash, the fireworks that everybody expected. Then we got David Lee, huh? And it turned out to be kind of almost a backfire, the David Lee move. So if we know anything about Ainge, he's looking at the moves that nobody else is looking at, and he's trying to figure out what, you know, who's available and how and why. DeRozan might be an option because he looks like he may not extend or may not sign his last year with the Raptors. You know,
right,
there's already players out there.
He's already said that he's looking, you know, to opt out. But I honestly think that given what he's doing with Kyle Lowry, it would not be far-fetched that he would likely to resign, even though the idea is anybody who chooses to opt out, you know, basically will just, you know, walk out the door and leave the North. But there's a different atmosphere going on in Toronto right now. I don't know. I'd be very interested to see if whether or not the Boston Celtics would look at something like that, you know, very closely in a person like DeMar DeRozan, who I think he's a quality basketball player, but is he the basketball player that the Boston Celtics would want and would need given what they've basically have already established. I think that would be an interesting way to kind of look at things. But let's just keep it like right now in the perspective. Let's keep it to the right now. So in your mind right now, you want something to completely bolster the front court. And bolstering the front court, that could mean that a Jared Sullinger, a Kelly Olynyk, you know, obviously David Lee would probably be packaged in. One of these guys is probably going to wind up having to pack their bags and leaving. I don't think Amir Johnson is going to be one of those guys. I think Brad Stevens truly likes what Amir Johnson provides, and really on the cheap, the Celtics can get away with keeping him, and he's completely fine either starting or just coming off of the bench. But I would think that if the idea is that they're going to make a move, it may involve moving a Sully or moving a Kelly Olynyk at the expense of getting someone who, like we, like you just mentioned, might be wanting to bolster. Are you okay with that? Because I know you are very big on Kelly O, much as like, you know, you're very big on Evan Turner. To me, is it worth, is the juice worth the squeeze in that particular manner? Because clearly Danny Ainge, he to me reminds me of, you know, he to me is like kind of like the Billy Beane of the NBA right now. All of these small little moves that he's made over the last couple of years, you know, really on the cheap, has helped this basketball team look like a respectable basketball team with a cachet that once they have the money available, they could throw it around like nothing. And then you add the tradition of the Boston Celtics and the winning atmosphere that is there and the fan base. It's a very easy look for a free agent to buy into the idea that they are willing to come here and to play. Look, a few years ago, I was completely surprised that Kevin Love was even thinking about the idea of playing with LeBron James in Cleveland when he had an opportunity to play in Boston, because I just felt like Kevin Love's game was situated great for him to flourish and shine in Boston. We didn't have anybody, and we needed someone. And everyone loves when we shoot the three for whatever reason. So, you know, here we go with the glory days of Larry Bird. We see that with a 6'10 guy like, you know, Kevin Love, albeit he doesn't play great defense. I think that the heart and hustle and the winning atmosphere would embellish him to be a greater player and to probably be a much more vocal person than what we've been seeing now for the last two seasons, as he's been, you know, relishing in the misery of playing with the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, completely losing his identity. Here, and this is one thing that I can honestly say as a Boston Celtic, when you come here to play, you will know very quickly what kind of basketball player you truly are and where you will fit in the NBA. Because when everybody wanted to oust Evan Turner, Evan Turner found his identity and his play with who? The Boston Celtics. Amir Johnson, where everybody still was not buying into the fact that the guy really is not, you know, he's not your prototypical starting power forward. He probably should have never been starting when he was playing with the Detroit Pistons. And probably should have never been starting when he was playing with the Toronto Raptors. But with the Boston Celtics, he fits just fine for what we need him to do. And there's a list of other guys, Tyler Zeller, number of guys that are throwaways, Jonas Jerepko, throwaways from other basketball teams. They somehow find their identity and their placement in what they can contribute for an NBA basketball team. And that's something that most other basketball players wish that they can do after playing 20 years in the D League and then finally getting called up on a 10-day contract, only to be excused out the front door and then watching some no-name superstar continue to be a cancer to the rest of that locker room. That's the one thing about the Boston Celtics that I truly respect, is that when they have the right coach, when they have the right organizational pecking order available to these players, you kind of see what you see from those guys. Whether or not it equates to them winning championships, I don't know. But I think in some way, shape, or form, it is a good indicator that this organization wants its talent to flourish, which is why I kind of question, is it necessary for them to make a big move for them in this course of this year, even if this team is maybe a top four, top five team in the Eastern Conference, or do you let the talent play and arrive at what you got?
Well, I think in that order, I think you kind of have to, you know, play it by ear. I don't think the Celtics in this season right now, with the pieces they have, are going to contend for anything, not for the Eastern Conference, and probably not for anything more than maybe a surprise, you know, first round win. We'll probably get, you know, somewhere between, you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th seed, depending on the team that we, you know, that we play against. We might surprise a team, upset, you know, a second or third team. Who knows? Maybe we play Chicago. I wouldn't want to play Toronto or Cleveland just because Cleveland gets all the calls, and Toronto is just pretty much a pretty complete team that seems to have our number every time we play them. But when it comes to making those moves, I think Ainge probably considers a lot of things. I think he looked at the 2011 move where he traded Perk at the deadline for Jeff Green, and that kind of destroyed pretty much all chemistry that that team had at that moment. I think maybe that trade in and of itself, not to rehash history, but that trade maybe signified something bigger for that era of players that were there, and it kind of symbolized, this is the beginning of, you know, the downturn. We're going to start shipping off these players one by one, or maybe in package deals. And it ended up did happening. This time, I think you have to be very careful, you know, not to disrupt that. But at the same time, we're not trying to make a run for a championship right now. I think everybody, every season, the Celtics go in and say, this is, you know, banner 18. Every Celtics fan wants banner 18.
Nick, why wouldn't the Celtics not think about trying to make a run for a championship right now? What would prevent them from being able to do something? I mean, look at it for what it is. Right now, we are in a conference where, aside from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you can make the argument that really, on paper, the Cleveland Cavaliers, or maybe just by from a talent perspective, the Cleveland Cavaliers are marketably better than everyone else in the Eastern Conference. But from 2 down to 8, it's an absolute toss-up on who might actually emerge as the possible opponent for the Cleveland Cavaliers to play in the Eastern Conference Championship. Why should it not be the Boston Celtics?
It absolutely could be if you get the right move. I mean, if Kevin Love happens to come along now, you know, with the whole shakeup in Cleveland, and we can, you know, trade a pick plus Sully plus, you know, what, maybe David Lee to make the, you know, the salaries work or something like that, I think that's fantastic. I don't know what Celtic fan wouldn't want to do that, unless you have those fans that are, you know, stuck on certain players because they just happen to be really big fans of, say, for example, Sullinger. I mean, but, you know, we're going to have to give up somebody like that. Sullinger, maybe an Avery Bradley, maybe, you know, Marcus Smart, I mean, seems to be getting better. Trading him, you really have to think about the future when you let go of those pieces. I think that Ainge needs to stop first with – which players does he want to be around as cornerstone pieces? I think Jay Crowder is one. Isaiah Thomas may be another, but I still am not completely 100% positive that the Angels sold on a 5'9" point guard being your main scorer, being your main go-to guy, being the main guy. Maybe he can be. Maybe he's, you know, a piece. Sure, if there's a trade, because I'm not, like I said, this team, right as it is, as it's built right now, is not going to compete for a championship. But if you can make a trade without breaking up whatever that nucleus is, the Ainge decides, these are the players that I really like, that I don't want to move unless some astronomical deal that I can't turn down comes along. If some, you know, a player on his way out, you know what I mean, that's not going to re-sign, or that, you know, that for some reason has worn out his welcome with the team that he's at, and we can get him for a deal, or that player for a deal that improves the team immediately, absolutely. But, I mean, is that deal going to come along? How often has that deal come along for the Celtics? I mean, I think Danny Ainge just had one masterful deal, that Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett deal that he had in 2007, and I think that he pulled, you know, some pretty big strings with his connections in Phoenix to get Isaiah Thomas, who is also a castaway. I mean, Isaiah Thomas, as great as he's playing now, was a castaway in Sacramento and a castaway in Phoenix. He was the odd man out. They wanted to give everybody playing time over him until he proved, and he said this in interviews, that he outplayed everybody, and they still didn't want to give him that starting playing time. So it really is, I mean, I'm being vague with the answers. Would I like them to make a change? Absolutely. I think that we need a president in the paint. I would love to see, for example, Greg Monroe. If we could trade Sullinger, Lee, and a pick, maybe not the Nets pick, but our own pick, for someone like Greg Monroe, I would do it. I think Greg Monroe is an underrated passer in the paint. I think he would fit, you know, fairly well in our game. He's an automatic 15 and 10 every night, whereas Jared Sullinger can get you 15 and 10, but it's going to come incrementally. Maybe 15 and 10 one game, the next game maybe 8 and 6 or 8 and 7, the next game maybe 10 and 9, and then, you know, 15 and 10. He doesn't get it every, you know, as consistently. So I think Monroe would be a great pick. I don't know about Cousins. I think Cousins as an idea was great. He's working somewhat in Sacramento because he's playing with his buddy Rondo. I don't think you're going to be able to separate those two unless the Kings just completely give up on Cousins, and then in which case you're going to have Cousins coming over here separated from his buddy, maybe not in the best of moods. I don't know if Cousins is the guy. Kevin Love, would love to have him. You know, I just think that we should be looking at a front court player. We have too many guards. I think maybe if a solid wing comes around. The only problem with DeRozan being, you know, a wing player that can score in bunches is that his three-point shooting isn't where the Celtics need it to be. It's about 27% from three, and that's not what we want from a shooting guard or a small forward, from a wing. We need wings that can shoot the three, because we're not the greatest three-point shooting team. But outside of that, I think that it's fine for the regular season, and we haven't even hit All-Star break, to have the run-and-gun style of play that we do, where we're running up and down. Isaiah Thomas is pushing the ball. We're forcing turnovers. We're getting these fast break points. But during the playoffs, when games slowed down, and I said, you know, people said this about the Golden State Warriors, but they're a special team. The game never slows down for them. But when it slows down for us, we're going to need players like Evan Turner, who can play half court, you know what I'm saying, point, and we're going to need somebody that we can dump the ball into to help, you know what I mean, space the floor. Spacing isn't all about just, you know, stick your power forward out, you know what I'm saying, stick Kelly Olynyk out on the three-point line and have everybody kind of like around the arc with one guy in the middle. It's the more dimensions we have to the game, the better our team can play. And we don't have that extra dimension of a post player right now. And I think if we added one, even somebody who has just even the size to make people respect it, you know what I mean, or the game to make it respected, that would add that extra element. But it really all depends on which players Ainge is willing to give up, which picks Ainge is willing to give up, and who the player he's getting back for, if that player is willing to even stay, if that player wants to be in Boston. But, yes, me personally, I would like a move that makes this team better now, because if we do it now at the trade deadline, that gives us the rest of this season a chance to build chemistry, and then next season maybe be, you know what I mean, amongst the top 1, 2, 3, 4 teams. Especially the way Cleveland is going now, they might not be the number one team for very much longer. Who knows if this is the beginning of a collapse or if this is the beginning of changes. They're already first place in the East. I don't know what caused this. Maybe the embarrassment by the Golden State Warriors the other day. Maybe that caused the firing of David Blatt. But I mean, with things shifting around so much, you're absolutely right. There's so much crowding between, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, you know, seeds in the East. That if the trade comes along, absolutely. But it has to be the right trade, and you can't just go flipping pieces just to get, you know, a piece that's not going to be here later on. If we trade Sellinger in a pick for some players that aren't going to be on this roster at the end of next year, then what did we accomplish? We're still spinning wheels. I would like at some point to see the assets that Danny Ainge has accumulated in terms of picks, in terms of young assets, in terms of large expiring contracts, and turn those, consolidate those into a quality rotation player or a quality player that can make a difference in some way, shape, or form in an area that the team needs. That's what I'd like to see.
But what you're looking for, though, is an immediate impact player, correct? Right? That's what you're looking for. This is no longer building up more assets, you know, where the focal point will be on who it is that we may draft and whether or not this guy is going to pan out to be what we are asking of, you know, what the current players that we have on this roster is. You're wanting an instant impact player, somebody who can come in and really swing the pendulum completely the opposite way in the way that people are going to have to play the Boston Celtics as we further ourselves closer to the playoff time.
Absolutely, because otherwise, then what's the point? We're just making lateral movements. We're trading assets for more assets, and then we have more small assets that are kind of doing the same thing we're doing now, where they fill a certain role, but not really all the roles. They're not complete players, you know, sort of like Sellinger. He's not a complete player. He fills, you know, a certain role. He rebounds fairly well. He can hit shots, you know, occasionally has good, you know, offensive games on occasion, but he's not a complete player. So if we can get somebody, yes, that would be that's the goal for me. I mean, if you can get other bigger name, you know, maybe the same production, similar production, you know, in terms of stats-wise, but the name is something bigger that people want, and we can, you know, shift these things around, and we get something that has more appeal to them, make a trade, you know, a bigger trade further down the line, sure. But I think if we're still at this point, you know, considering where the Celtics are and how much they've, you know, they've grown, if we're going to argue that the Celtics are ahead of schedule in terms of the rebuild, that the turnaround has been very quick, and that we're now, you know, already we were a playoff team last year, we're looking at being a playoff team this year, we're not that far out of being a top four seed. If we're going to claim that the turnaround, that we're ahead of schedule on the rebound, the turnaround has been so quick, then we shouldn't continue still making these lateral moves unless those lateral moves feature a player or feature something that has greater appeal down the line to make a bigger move. But yes, I think now Ainge should be looking at consolidating those assets into something that will have, and I'm not saying it has to be a superstar, but somebody that will contribute, you know what I'm saying, to the rotation. David Lee is not. Tyler Zeller, barely. You know what I mean? These are guys that aren't contributing hardly anything. So let's get in. Draft picks are always more valuable before they've been drafted. Once they've been drafted, you know what they are. You know, you don't get as much for them. So I think that consolidating those and getting somebody that can contribute now, yes, that should be the A1 goal. And if not that, sure, maybe some lateral movements. But, you know, I mean, at some point, like I said, there has to be some fruit born from all of these assets. It's great to accumulate assets, but, you know, assets don't win, you know, championships. Actual players do, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I think that this team needs to do now. I think that we're on that precipice of being – we've shown the Chicago Bulls, I think, were the second or third ranked team in the East when we beat them tonight. We've shown we can compete with those upper-tier teams. We just need that extra, you know, maybe just an extra piece that can score consistently, that can give us consistent, you know what I'm saying, whatever it is, something consistent every single game that can help us, you know, take us to that extra next level. That's, I mean, I just think that's a reasonable expectation. I'm not expecting, you know, Anthony Davis to walk in the door, that's for sure. I don't know if I'm all eager to say just grab any big man you possibly can find, anybody that's, you know, close to 7 feet and can, you know, grab 8 to 10 rebounds a game. No, but, you know, somebody that fits into Brad Stevens' system and someone that can contribute immediately as opposed to someone who might be, you know what I mean? Because if we're just going to wait to see what they're going to do down in the future, then we might as well just bank on the players that we have. We might as well bank and see that maybe Sully might lose a little bit of weight. Maybe Sully might consistently hit a jump shot. Maybe Kelly Olynyk might, you know, grow some balls and be a little bit tough down in the paint, a little bit tougher down in the paint, maybe get better defense. Maybe we can hope that, you know, Avery Bradley can, you know, keep his legs for an entire game instead of petering, you know, scoring in bunches and then petering out later. Maybe we can, you know, all those things. Maybe we can just hope that this team grows together as a championship team. I just don't know if the pieces are there. Unless Jay Crowder next season takes a similar jump that he had this season, in which case we're talking about Kawhi Leonard status for Jay Crowder, because there's not that much farther he can go if he keeps growing. Then, you know, there's the players that we have right now, as much growing and as much training as we can possibly give them, I don't think they're going to grow into a championship team by themselves. They're still missing an element. Whatever the element may be, whether it's a great, fantastic, you know, dynamic, athletic wing scorer, or it's somebody who can, you know, take up space in the paint, you know, and give us 10 boards a game and can, you know, if not block shots, at least, you know, deter some shots. One of those things, something that fills a hole in this team. We need to fill some of the holes because there are still holes that need to be filled. And, you know, if we plan on contending for a championship, you know, in the future, within the next few years, those holes need to be filled and not just, you know, lateral moves and more draft picks.
Well, excellent stuff, Nick, man. And listen, the everything that you know, are indicating here to me is kind of like the dilemma that Danny Ainge is probably going to have to look at. It could be sweet satisfaction knowing that you have a talented bunch of guys, but sometimes you wish that those guys were either just too talented or just too damn bad, because then it would be much easier for you to figure out how you want to move certain players. But when you've got guys that collectively are playing the kind of basketball, one, that's inspiring because it's kind of doctrined within what we're seeing from the successful teams. It's the blueprint of what we see from teams like the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I'm not saying that the Boston Celtics have the makeup of the San Antonio Spurs or the Golden State Warriors, but the concept of a balance and the ability to utilize all of the players to play, you know, within themselves and to be able to help contribute to help them win basketball games, that to me is a recipe for sustained success. It's always been a recipe for the Boston Celtics for them to sustain their success. And along the way, yeah, we've had a Larry Bird, a Havlicek, a Robert Parrish, a Kevin McHale, you know, a Reggie Lewis, a Paul Pierce, you know, and then along the way we'll pick up a Kevin Garnett, a Ray Allen, you know. And so to me, that to me is where it started. It started first in buying into the idea that we have some guys that really feel comfortable playing in that white and green, that feel comfortable about going out there, win or lose, and laying it all on the basketball court, because we started to lose our way in our identity and trying to figure out where we are because we were so headstrong in making all of these free agent acquisitions to try and build up a championship roster. The thing that I feared is, in the midst of doing all of that, the identifiable players that needed to still make their mark for this basketball team were no longer there. The Leon Poes, the James Poseys, I'm not saying that those guys were the heart and soul of the team, but they were the cornerstone pieces especially when your top-level players were not playing consistently on a night-in, night-out basis. We literally gave those guys away at the expense to say we needed to pick up a Nate Robinson, or we needed to pick up a Shaquille O'Neal, whatever the case may be. And so right here, right now, you know, when I look at this basketball team, and it's interesting because the question that I wanted to follow up with you on is, all right, who's in Nick's inner circle? If we're talking about we can't move these guys because they right now are the face or the identity of where this Boston Celtics team has gotten to at this point, you know, who is in that inner circle for you? And then ultimately, who is, you know, who's fair game? Who is it that you would be thinking that you look at this roster and say, you know what, I have no problems with moving this dude if it's going to potentially get me, you know, Kevin Love is a reach because the contract is just ginormous and he's re-up and they're going to have to figure a way to make it work. But even if we said someone like a caliber of like a Kevin Love or Boogie Cousins, who's a part of your inner circle that they can't be added to the mix in order for that trade to go down or for it to happen?
I think you probably got to start with Crowder just because of his contract. I think $7 million a year for what he's doing right now is just absolutely incredible, especially when the cap space jumps this offseason. His salary is going to be pretty much close to veterans minimum for all that you give him. So I'd say you got to start probably with Crowder. I'd keep Isaiah Thomas around it, even if you don't find in the future, you know, a more, you know, ball handling, someone that can, you know, distribute and play that. I think that, you know, even if you don't find that type of point guard, Isaiah Thomas would, you know, even if you do find that type of point guard, Isaiah Thomas would still be that spark from the sixth man position. And I think, again, his salary is fairly reasonable given what we got him for from the Suns. To me, Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier, I mean, those three guys, obviously Bradley's a better shooter, but I think that I've always had an issue, and it has nothing to do with his defense, but I've always had an issue with the size of a 6'1", you know, shooting guard that, you know, that we play small ball as it is, but then when you have a 5'9" point guard and a 6'1" shooting guard, there's just like, there's no size. And then, of course, Marcus Smart is playing the three at 6'4". I mean, you just have zero size. It's not even, you know, like if you look at Golden State Warriors and they play small ball, and Steph Curry is their point guard, he's 6'3", you know what I mean? So it's not small ball. And then their backup is Livingston, who I think is even taller than that. He's like 6'5", 6'6". So I would, you know, I would say maybe Smart over Avery Bradley. I'd probably keep Olynyk over Sullinger just because I don't see, you know, the big difference in defense from either one of them. I think obviously Sully's a better rebounder, but I think that the goal ultimately should be to get somebody that is the solid, you know what I mean, down low presence, where there's a traditional center or, you know, an athletic center, but they can grab rebounds, where, you know, the Kelly or whoever is the power forward, you know, Rebko as a backup or somebody, can play, you know, the stretch position while the true center, the big man, is down low. So I think I'd probably keep Kelly. He's a better shooter in that sense. He's better fit for that system. So out of those, I'd probably say, you know, Crowder, Isaiah, Kelly, maybe Marcus Smart. I think, you know, Avery Bradley, I think you could live without Avery Bradley. His defense is still quasi-elite. I just think that he's having trouble right now playing both sides of the ball effectively. I think that if he's going to play defense, his shot's up. If he's playing, focusing on his offense, I think his defense slips a little bit, and I don't think that he has room to slip on defense when he's trying to close out on shooters that are 3 or 4 inches taller than him. He's fighting around picks, and he's trying to close out, and he just doesn't have that. So, Avery Bradley probably get rid of. I would like to see what R.J. Hunter can do as a rookie, maybe get him some more minutes. The other guys, you know, Jerebko, he can go. Lee, obviously, is already almost out the door. Zeller is not going to be extended or even offered. I mean, if he is, it's going to be for vet minimum, you know, to just be like a backup. But maybe those four guys, Crowder, Thomas, Kelly, and Smart, you know what I mean, are probably the guys that I would try to keep. And I think that leaves you enough of, you know, the contract space, enough of, you know, young players like Avery Bradley, like Jared Sullinger, gives you enough pieces, you know, to dangle. And then the picks gives you enough pieces to dangle to maybe get somebody that's effective, while not breaking up, you know, those core pieces, if that makes any sense to you. it made sense to me. But, yeah, probably Crowder, Thomas, Kelly, Smott. I mean, I like Turner myself personally. I think Turner has been a stopgap in a way. He's been able to, you know, pick up the ball handling, the half-court ball handling abilities as Marcus Smart learns, you know, how to be an NBA point. And that's one of those things. If Marcus Smart never fully learns that, and he's kind of always just going to be a tweener, even playing, you know, the three in Brad Stevens' system, then, you know, you might have to keep Evan Turner, although I can't justifiably, as much as I like Evan Turner, say that he's a guy you have to keep around. Although I think that you'll find with Evan Turner that most of the NBA probably looks at him as a system guy, and his efficacy is probably not going to be as strong on other teams and other systems that it is in Brad Stevens' system. I mean, nobody's lining up to give, you know, a 6'7" small forward who can't shoot the three, who's shooting like 15% from three, but who can handle the ball and, you know, get and drop dimes and get rebounds. I mean, nobody's really looking for that except for someone like Brad Stevens who thinks outside the box. So, I mean, if the cost of, you know, losing Turner is bigger than the cost of, you know, keeping him, then obviously I think you just keep him just because of value. But that depends on what, you know, what value he's going to ask for in the off season. But I think those four guys that I mentioned earlier, and then maybe a couple of those other guys, I think Evan is one of those guys that you, like, sort of like, you know, the guys that you mentioned earlier, like, you know, like Poe and like Posey and like some of those other guys that you get, you know, to come off the bench and that can really do, you know, do certain things fairly well. I think Evan Turner has confidence. I think Evan Turner, when you put him in the game, in the half-court game, when the game comes down in the crunch, he makes fewer mistakes than Isaiah Thomas, who can be a little bit out of control. And I think you need both. I think you need the hard-pushing point guard like Isaiah Thomas, but you also need someone who can run the half-court offense. And if that never becomes Marcus Smart, at least you have, you know, someone like Evan Turner that can do it for you. But those, you know, four or five players, and then the rest, you know, there's enough there, especially with the picks, to, you know, to probably, you know, coax somebody away from a team that they don't really want to be at, you know, they don't want to be with, and that maybe the GM of that team thought they were going to get more out of them. I mean, I keep thinking of Moose as a perfect example of a guy who wanted to go to an Eastern Conference team with the chance of playing in the playoffs, and the Bucks thought that adding, you know, Greg Monroe was going to be that guy, was going to, you know, be that piece to, you know, put him over the edge, and the Bucks are just not, you know, getting there. Maybe Greg Monroe, after half a season, is unhappy. He showed interest in Boston. We just didn't show as much interest back in free agency in this past offseason. Maybe a trade, you know, Sully Lee in a pick for Monroe, and then there you have, you know, your 6'10", 6'11", you know, big guy who can get you, you know, 15 and 10 a game, and a game changer on top of that. Add him to, you know, to Crowder, to Thomas, to I mean, he fits right into that, you know, that whole thing. Maybe Amir. I mean, I don't know. Amir's salary will be cheap when the cap jumps, but I think that $12 million for Amir right now is on the high price. But, I mean, he's only here. I think next year is a player option or a team option or something, so he might come off the books as well, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, good stuff, man, Nick. And look, man, This is the state of affairs with this Boston Celtics team. I think that the turnaround time for them to get to where they are was a little bit sooner than expected, and I think now the sense of urgency that's being reflected is more so on the fact that you're looking at a conference where anyone has an opportunity to get there, and before, you know, people start buying into the hype about how great the Boston Celtics could possibly be if they were to ever go in and you know, pull out an upset, whoever it is that they wind up playing, if ultimately it's going to wind up being one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, if that pans out to be the Cleveland Cavaliers or, you know, maybe the Chicago Bulls truly indeed turn out to be that team, maybe the Toronto Raptors, maybe the Atlanta Hawks, maybe, you know, whoever it is. It's just that, if that happens, the one thing that I don't want to see happen is that we overblow or overhype the expectations of where this basketball team really needs to be, because like you said, they are still a few pieces away from being the kind of basketball team where you could look at them just sheer eye test and just say, this should be a top four basketball team right now. Right now, they're not that. You know what I mean? Clearly, their record – does not reflect a team that should be in the conversation about being one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. However, by default, you can kind of put them in there because the level of competition is so evenly keeled. And the style of matchups, which obviously is going to play very much a big role in what will happen and what will be dictated in the playoffs, that to me is going to be one of the key factors that's going to drive Danny Ainge's movements going into the trade deadline and beyond. Because when you think about this, teams that normally are building to say, we need to get over this team. This is our benchmark. And one of the funniest things is, and it's the reason why I feel like for a team like the Boston Celtics, for a team maybe like even the Chicago Bulls, you know, for what happened tonight with the Cleveland Cavaliers in letting go David Blatt, what you clearly saw is that this was a clear sign that this head coach did not have the respect and did not command the respect of the players that are supposed to be playing for him. Now, Tyronn Lue is supposed to be the new head coach. They signed him to a multi-year deal. My question then will become, well, what will be the identity of this Cleveland Cavaliers team? What would we say defines the Cleveland Cavaliers? Because if the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be this team that's going to continually make it into the playoffs and say a team like the Boston Celtics keep running into the Cleveland Cavaliers and unfortunately fall susceptible to defeat to them every single time, then you're going to start seeing our GM start to make moves to build a team that is built to defeat the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's not even worried about whether or not this team is built to beat the Golden State Warriors, the San Antonio Spurs, or anyone else that's in the NBA. He wants to make sure that it's built to get past the team that they can't get past. And at times, it's difficult because when you don't know what identity a team represents, it's hard for you to go out and get the proper pieces of players that can help supplement what's necessary for your team to better that other team. And it's difficult as well, too, because that's not really how you should cater to it. You should look at your own roster and say, this is what we want. This is the kind of flow in the offense and the kind of players and pieces we want in our defensive scheme. This is what we need. And you have to be confident that these guys will get it. They'll understand it. They'll go out and they'll execute it. And it'll be good enough for them to get past the better teams in the Eastern Conference. But right now, it's a mosh pit of talent. And somewhere along the line, you have to sift through it and figure out which of these teams have the better pieces in play to ultimately grab checkmate, which is vying for an opportunity to play in the Eastern Conference Finals and hopefully to an NBA Finals. This is CLNS Radio's post-game show, Cal Lee, and I have my quasi-special guest, Nick, who normally joins in with us and gives us his take with stuff going on with the Boston Celtics, and you know, his insight is always well respected and well received, and we love having you jump on and talking with us and giving us your perspective of what you see from a night in, night out basis, you know, with the Celtics team. And what really impressed me more than anything, Nick, about what I've seen from this Celtics team, not just tonight but through the course of this season, is that there is a contribution level that is coming on a consistent basis from the bench players. I know at times when we watch most of these games, we can't tell the starters from the bench players because sometimes the bench players look a whole lot worse, you know. But tonight, it was a really good night for the bench to come in and really help sustain what the Boston Celtics were able to do. We got our man Jared Weiss calling in from the Grandstand app, and he's going to help us kind of give us a feel for this tonight's victory. Jared, thanks for calling in with us, man.
What's up, boys?
Listen, man, we're just relishing in the fact that the Boston Celtics, you know, laid a nice little beat down to the Chicago Bulls. And one of the things that I think we all wanted to get from you as you call in on the Grandstand app, the Celtics Locker Room Report, is how good of a feeling was it for these guys to really have this type of convincing victory over, you know, listen, this is a Chicago Bulls team that when it's all said and done, they're very well probably going to be one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference.
You think the Celtics are going to be one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference?
No, the Bulls. The Bulls.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I must be drunk already.
We're sipping on the Kool-Aid over here a lot already, right?
Well, I mean, the Kool-Aid has been spiked, apparently. But Chicago is, I mean, they are a top three team in the, actually, I guess technically they're not. But, I mean, they're pretty much right there. But they're going through their own little struggle right now. And Derrick Rose was upset after the game. Pau Gasol was upset. Jimmy Butler was upset. I mean, they're going through their own struggles. And I guess maybe it shed some light for the fact that pretty much I would have said that the Cleveland Cavaliers were the only team that weren't really in a dire state in the Eastern Conference, and they just fired their coach today. So pretty much every team in the Eastern Conference is going through a pretty significant up and down right now. The Celtics were just going through it last week, and you know, every other week with the Celtics, it's like, is the sky actually falling? It's kind of hard to tell. All we know is the sun just keeps getting closer and closer. With Chicago, they're going through it right now.
Well, there's always a lot. There's always turbulence when we talk about the Celtics, because just when we think that they've kind of found their way and they found their groove, then they'll find a way to, like, you know, the losses to like the Grizzlies, to the Knicks, and then somehow they'll pull out these great victories against the Indiana Pacers. Can you talk a little bit about what Brad Stevens' mindset was like, you know, seeing what they did in the first half and then building that lead and then watching it kind of dissipate in the third quarter? It sounded like he was really getting hard on his guards to, you know, play better defense, because clearly that lead that they built up just kind of quickly went away.
Yeah, I mean, Stevens, I think, was probably pretty pissed off that they blew yet another lead, which seems to be their specialty. They seem to live in the turbulent. They like to toe the edge of the cliff. It's like their specialty. Tonight was one of those, frankly, rare nights where they pretty much blew it, and then they were still able to hold on. I mean, Chicago made one huge run, then they fought them off, thanks to mostly Tyler Zeller in the early fourth quarter. And then they made another huge run in the fourth quarter, and then it got to the point that it was a one-point game until the Celtics were able to explode. I mean, Isaiah Thomas had another one of those nights where he really put the team on the back, and Steven said that they made some pretty crucial defensive adjustments in the last 5 minutes, how he was really focusing in on how high to the big men on the pick and roll go out to guard guys like Derrick Rose or Jimmy Butler or Aaron Brooks, whoever's guarding. And they made a lot of adjustments to that as the game went on. And that, frankly, with Derrick Rose just going full head of steam and all the way he can change gears, the way they can change direction. Rose is pulling up from deep in the fourth quarter, that it's pretty much impossible to stop him. But that Tyler and Sully both came up with some balls in the last 10 minutes or so that was really crucial. And then Isaiah just had another one of those end of games where he went on a flurry.
And when, you know, when you're talking about how, you know, Isaiah Thomas is like taking it upon himself to be a lot more aggressive as far as you know, shooting the basketball, really taking an onus that helps us, you know, solidify, put the clamp down, nail in the coffin against this, not just against the Chicago Bulls, against most of these teams that, you know, that the Celtics have been facing. You know, what is it that you're noticing from Isaiah Thomas that, you know, is kind of giving a little bit more confidence as we start getting closer to, you know, All-Star break, about his game and the consistency and the flow and, you know, the three-headed monster? Are they starting to kind of get back to rounding into form where they were being that formidable force like they were at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt that they're at their best when they have Smart out there that is as a defensive catalyst. And then really, Bradley, obviously, because he's one of their best all-around players, but I think they're really at their best when they're closing these games with that three-headed monster of little Isaiah, little Marcus, and little Avery. It's worked so well because they push the ball really hard. They're swarming defensively. And Isaiah Thomas, I think he's had a pretty good season defensively, considering his stature, considering the ways that other teams abuse him with switches and trying to get him switched on the big men. I think he's done a really good job holding his own this year, and he's done everything else really well. And, you know, he's never going to be a 40% three-point shooter. That's Kelly Olynyk's job now, apparently. But Isaiah can't hit the threes when he needs to. And he did hit a big three. It was in the third quarter tonight. He had a crucial three for them. But Isaiah has been kind of that guy. And everyone says that the Celtics don't have a star. I mean, Isaiah Thomas definitely does a lot of the things that a star does. I think it's more difficult for him, so he fails a lot more often than a lot of other stars would. But he's doing that star thing, and that's what they really need out of him. And it seems game after game after game, the offense kind of sputters out, the defense collapses in the fourth quarter, but he's always there scoring 6-8 points in the fourth quarter, no matter what.
Jared Weiss joining us here through the Grandstand app on the CLNS postgame show. Jared, final question before we let you go here. It's been reported, obviously, due to the Norr storm that's going to take place probably within hours for now, that the game that was supposed to be for tomorrow night against the 76ers has been bumped to Sunday. What does this do for most of these players now that they know that they have a game that they're supposed to be prepared for within 24 hours now? They get that extra day worth of rest. You know, are they thinking much about, you know, that this is a great opportunity for them to get the much-needed rest after this hard-earned victory against the Chicago Bulls?
I mean, I think Jay Crowder is the only one that really cares because he was sick and definitely looked at tonight. Although I found out after the game that Jimmy Butler, the guy that was going up against him, was also sick, so that was pretty ironic. But I guess it's good for them, but, you know, they're going to have – so basically they're going to have a practice tomorrow that's going to function as basically a shoot-around and a walkthrough because they're not going to be able to do it Sunday because right now their game is – so their game's at 7:30 in Philadelphia on Sunday. They currently don't really know how they're going to get to the game. So I wouldn't expect, it's not a certain thing that this game is going to happen because the Sixers can't play the Celtics. The Celtics are not in Philadelphia. Although there'd be some cool virtual reality experiment there if they wanted to make that work. But right now,
oh, yeah, NBA 2K all day, man. NBA 2K
I know,
all
right?
day.
That'd be a cool way to settle it. But so the Celtics are hoping that they can fly out on Saturday, but they don't know if they're going to be able to even do that. And then, you know, there's a certain point on Sunday to like how late they can fly out. So they might not be getting any sleep Saturday night. They really have no idea when they're going to be able to pull it off. But I'd imagine the Celtics have to take like a 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock flight to Philadelphia if they want to be able to actually make the game on time. So it'll be really interesting to see if the game gets delayed by an hour, if they catch a later flight, or if the game even happens at all. So I don't think that the Celtics having the back-to-back pushed off is necessarily going to make their lives easier.
All right, Jared Weiss joining us, man. We appreciate you hopping on. Stay warm, my friend. Close up the doors, keep everything locked up and stuff, man. And I guess we will hear from you when the Celtics return back home for that Denver game on the 27th, right?
Yeah, I'm wearing 2 scarves tonight, baby. I'm keeping nice and warm.
Hey, get that Alpha Cider warmed up too, man. Don't forget that now.
All right, sounds good. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jared. Jared Weiss calling in from the Grandstand app, the CLNS postgame show. Cal Lee here joining with you. And there you have it. You know, the Boston Celtics, they've announced that the game tomorrow against the Philadelphia 76ers at Philadelphia has been postponed. It will be postponed for Sunday. That could be tentative depending on the severity of the storm and whether or not it will delay travel. But think about it like this, though. The Celtics then now have that game on Sunday and then follow up that Monday with the game against the Washington Wizards on the 25th. So, you know, maybe in some respects it probably was better that they were to have the game tomorrow night in Philly to give them that extra day's rest so that they can prepare for the Washington Wizards. But you know what? Again, trap game. This is a game that the Boston Celtics really should be capable of winning. While there has been improved play from the Philadelphia 76ers, it's still the 76ers. And so this is a great opportunity, again, for the Boston Celtics to go on a 3-4 game win streak. Because following up that, they have a Washington Wizards team that has basically been really off this year. Regardless of the all-star play of John Wall, they still don't know who they are, and you don't know what Wizards team is going to show up that night. Then you follow it up with the rebuilding Denver Nuggets team. And then you've got 2 critical basketball games against the Orlando Magic. You know, and listen, this Orlando Magic team is nothing to scoff at. They play great defense, resurrected by the coaching of Scott Skiles, the talent of Victor Oladipo, the emergence of Nikola Vucevic. Aaron Gordon now is coming into his home as he was just inserted into the starting lineup tonight. And they really, really, really gave the Charlotte Hornets a run for their money. This is a team that's going to basically be above 500 possibly for the better part of the season. And so these are games where momentum can certainly swing in a direction for the Boston Celtics that they can literally go 5 or 6 games above 500 if they can get these quality basketball wins. But it has to start
hopefully Sunday night when they take on the Philadelphia 76ers. They take the momentum from this game, albeit it's now not 24, but more 48 hours from tonight, and you go in there, and again, you impose your will on the competition. You jump on them early, and then hopefully, as Jared alluded to, Brad Stevens won't have to look pissed knowing that his team can't hold leads, which seems to be one of the problematic issues with this Boston Celtics team going into the second half of basketball games. They look good for the first half, but in the second half, they have trouble maintaining that high level of play in order to continue throttling whatever it is that they wind up playing against. Once again, this is the post-game show, CLNS Radio. Cal Lee here joining up with you. A couple of final thoughts before we jump off tonight. When you think about this Boston Celtics team, and much like to what our caller Nick had really eloquently put, this is not a championship team just yet. However, there are some really good pieces that you can truly build off of through that. Now, will this constitute Danny Ainge down the road trying to make a move, trying to shake things up, pull a New York Mets type of move, bringing in our Jonas Cespedes type player to come in and really help us put us over the top to kind of make us that formidable team that you don't want to play against in the playoffs? I'm not too sure. And unfortunately, in the game of basketball, it's so fickle when you make those type of trades. We just saw Josh Smith, who went from the Detroit Pistons to the Houston Rockets last season, helps this Houston Rockets team play to a second seed in the Western Conference, ultimately helps them pull off one of the greatest upsets in NBA history when they upended the Los Angeles Clippers, who were a shoe-in to advance to the Western Conference Finals, but wound up blowing Game 6 and ultimately choked on Game 7. Josh Smith was a part of that team that found themselves playing in the Western Conference Finals as a Houston Rocket. And then no sooner at the offseason, he signs with the Los Angeles Clippers. The Los Angeles Clippers want to have nothing to do with him because everything about Josh Smith's game was just most of smoking mirrors to what he reverted back to why they got rid of him in Detroit. So now he winds up right back with the Los Angeles Clippers. And it's just interesting. You can sit here and look and span at all of some of these potential players, but only until that they actually come in and you watch them play and interact with their teammates, their new teammates, with the system, with the coaches, are you really going to be able to see if whether or not this guy is going to be a difference maker for a team that already is a successful basketball team. So while there are some trades that actually can work for the better, there are some trades that if they are done and maybe with the best intentions could wind up doing more reputable harm to a basketball team that's already showing success. Well, be sure to tune in with us come Sunday night, hopefully, where the Boston Celtics will be down in Philly to take on the 76ers, hopefully riding on a two-game win streak. Then they will head down to Washington on Monday, January the 25th. Tip-off time is at 7 p.m., so be sure to check us here on Blog Talk Radio. And be sure to keep the number down because we want to hear from you, 347-215-7771 on the FanDuel toll-free line as we will talk Celtics basketball in the postgame after they take on the Philadelphia 76ers. So, for CLNS, Cal Lee, I'd like to thank you guys for tuning in. I'd like to thank my man Nick for calling and Jared Weiss calling in on the Grandstand app to give us the Celtics locker room report. We'll catch up with you guys Sunday. You guys have a good rest of the weekend. And stay warm if you're up here in the north.